Blog Talk Radio.
Lock and load.
Nobody knew who the hell he was.
Or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-teeny stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Well, hello.
Hi, Bella. How are you?
Well, so considering when I got in tonight, and I'm, you know, it's like 10 after the hour, and I'm just trying to make it up to George Patton Jr.'s rig in enough time to have some leftover stew so I can run either into the Night Coming Man Shack to do the show or in my truck, which I'm actually in the Night Coming Man Shack right now. But so I called just to make sure that the stew was heating and waiting for me. And when so the phone is ringing, which I'm used to when I call up to the rig, but then when they answer it, I can hear in the background, incoming, Isabella. And I'm thinking, and it's like a computer-generated voice. Where are those two loons up to? Apparently they spent too much time with nothing on their hands or something. And so then we answered, I said, what's for dinner? And he says, this is a drilling operation, Isabella. And I said, what's for dinner? And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, this is the homeless shelter for Isabella. He says, you got two hands, you got two feet. You can find dinner. And I said, I don't have time to find dinner. What's for dinner tonight? He said, you know, some of us have to eat during the day. We don't run around and drink Diet Cokes and Muscle Milk. He said, so we ate that stew. And I said, well, then what am I going to have for dinner? And he goes, well, why didn't you stop and pick up a pizza? I said, I don't do pizza. And the night coming in, I said, what are you, glucose intolerant? I said, no, I'm big butt intolerant. No, thank you. Just because I live in North Dakota doesn't mean I have to look like it. Got it, guys? So I said, what do you have got in the fridge? He said, well, I got some burger. I was thinking of making burger and some eggs. I said, perfect. Patty up some burgers. I'll grab buns, lettuce, tomato, onion, and I will be there. So when you did me, I was just sitting down to my yummy Swiss cheeseburger with my chips and dip, and I told, and I had gotten a text from George when I was at the grocery store saying, poor me. I don't know, George has been put through kind of a little bit of traumatization this weekend.
So you left George Patton Jr.'s kitchen a disaster and walked out. Why, yes, you did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
I've had a great weekend. I've had a lot of fun. We're going to have a good show tonight. We're trying something out for the second week. We've got Rick Trader coming on, and Rick is bringing two guests. We're going to play the interviews that he had. And then we're going to banter back and forth. But we got to have some fun, first of all, because, as you know, especially Sundance, I've had some aggravation lately, and I don't want it anymore. I don't.
Not you.
Well, let's start it out with, I think we've got some questions, and we got a Carmack. Let's start out with the questions, and then I'll segue and fill it in with the rest of my weekend. How's that? Mix it up.
All right, I do have a question, and then I had to talk to Wilson today about some Carmack questions. So you want to start out with a question?
Sure.
Okay. This is from John from Tennessee, okay? You want to know one of the more interesting statements about the president that you have heard?
Funny you would ask me that one. So, among one of my stops over the weekend, right? I mean, I worked through the weekend, and on Saturday, I stopped at the shortstop in Arnagard. You know where that place is. And, you know, those guys, they're like my family. I'm in and out of there all the time. And so when the cashier, I call him a communist, because every time I come in there to get my Diet Coke, I always give him a hard time and tell him that he upcharges me every time when I come in. So no different, I'm standing in line, and I'm telling, I said, yeah, you communist bastard, what are you up to today? And there's this young black guy standing next to me, and he goes, communist? And I said, oh, I said, do you know what a communist is? And he said, no. I said, do you know what a Marxist is? He said, no. I said, do you know what a socialist is? He said, no. I said, do you know what a liberal is? He said, no, ma'am, I don't. And I said, do you know what a conservative is? And he said, ma'am, I really don't know. And I said, then let me ask you this. I said, you're out here, you're working, correct? He said, yes. I said, do you know what it is to have too much taxes taken out of your paycheck? And he said, yes, ma'am, I do. And I said, then you know what a communist, Marxist, socialist, liberal, commie Nazi is giving it to the conservative who's out working and paying for the 53% that's trying to bend us all over. So, and he looked at me, and I said, let me ask you something, son. I said, what do you think about the commander-in-chief? And he said, well, what I'd like to say, I don't want to say it out loud. And he said, because this conversation is probably being recorded. And I said, why would you think that this conversation is being recorded? I said, have you been at one of my rigs where they enlightened you to who I am and they got you believing some drone is hovering over or something? And he said, ma'am, I'm just saying, I fear and I'm concerned this might be might be recorded. Which, by the way, I saw him today. So what I saw him today, I said, I'm going to talk about this over the weekend or on the show tonight. So, yes, it is being recorded. And now for the whole world to hear his statement. This is what he said to Nance. He said, I will tell you this much, and I got to say this with a little bit of political correctness because I'm supposed to behave a little bit these days, although it's not working very well. I don't seem to be able to behave for very long at all. But let me try.
Yeah, no.
So he said, I will hand it to Clinton. He said at least Clinton only wanted, Clinton only wanted a blowjob. I'm not syndicated yet, Sundance. I can say these things.
Made you kind of choke before you said that one, didn't it?
But he said at least he was looking out for the country. He said, from what I know, and I'm young, he said, but at least he was looking out for the country. And then all of a sudden I caught the eyes and ears of a driver behind, and I said, yeah, I am the radio girl. And so I ran out to the truck, and I grabbed cards, and I hand-delivered my card to them. But when I saw him today, I told him, and I said, I will be speaking of our encounter this weekend. But, you know, this goes back to what I say all along. I think there's a lot more people that are aware of what's going on in this country. So, anyways, there's next. I'm on a roll.
Okay. Well, talking to Wilson today, you know, I talk to Wilson every now and then, and we talk about you sometimes, but he has a Carmack question. All right, this is George Patton Jr., Mississippi 2. In yard guard, and I was afraid to ask. The yard guard kind of threw me off, and I didn't want to ask any questions.
You know, there's really got to be some monitoring between you and Wilson. I mean, this isn't even fair that the two of you are in cahoots with each other. It really isn't.
You should just be prepared to who you introduce me to.
Yeah, I got that. What do those three have in common? I know what he's talking about. There's this little thing that Mississippi 2 always says to me that I got to slow my grinder down. And, you know, that's the wheels spinning in my head. And you know, like Aaron used to say, it's a full-time job, just me trying to stay ahead of me, trying to stay ahead of those wheels that never slow down. Well, and then there's the what about Bob guy.
We've been behind you before.
What's that?
I said, we've been behind you trying to follow you before, and it's impossible.
As George himself says, son, pack a lunch and bring a few energy bars and energy drinks and keep up with her. Well, sometimes I get a little overactive in my mind. And anyways, let me just give – why did he have to give you these three? This isn't even fair.
Well, I'm curious about George Patton Jr. because I know the man, but I'm really curious about the yard guard.
I'm going to rat my own self out, and Wilson's at the heart of this thing. You know, I've got what about Bob and me, right? Hypochondriac. I've got a little bit of hypochondriacism in me. Sundance, you probably
no.
already kind of noticed.
Not you.
So Friday night, I said to George, I said, you know what, I just want a really relaxing, quiet, nice night. I just want to hang out. I want to shop for my Avon. I want to sit on my computer. I just don't want to be jacked with, right? And so I make a great Greek salad, and he makes stew, and we've got Fox on. That's when I started watching it. That's when Russia made its entrance to Ukraine, as we were talking about that. But anyways, won't get into the political. I'm going to still keep you guys laughing here. So we have dinner, and you know, it was cold. It was butt cold Friday night. It's still cold last night. But so when we hang out and I'm shopping, and he looks at me, and because he's over in his recliner, I'm sitting over in another chair, and he goes, this is good for you, Red. You're being quiet. You're being peaceful. You're not yammering at the gums. You're not screaming about nothing. I said, yeah, I can be calm and relaxed. And so then I go to start my pickup, and it was so cold that I backed the rear end of the truck right up to his steps, so I didn't have to walk very far. Doesn't matter if anybody wants to actually enter the shack to the ring.
That's amazing, because you always park out into the yard 500 feet away and walk in.
Not when it's cold. So I back it all the way up. And anyway, then he doesn't have the balcony in the front anymore because he's got a new shack, so I can pull it right up to the door. So I go out and I start it, and I don't think anything about it. And I come back in, and I'm back online, and I'm looking through my little Avon catalog. And, yeah, I'm not a high-end cosmetic girl, no. Anyway, so finally, and he's got, I think he had, like, gun smoke on or something like that. Well, anyways, the night relief finally comes in, and he opens the door from the office to the living area, and he looks at us, and he goes, you didn't kill him off yet. And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, do you have any idea how much that diesel is putting off in that exhaust? And I looked at him, and I said, and George goes, I don't smell it. And I said, yeah, I don't either. And he goes, all right, guys. So he shuts the door, and we just hang out and keep watching TV. And all of a sudden, George looks at me and goes, Red, I do kind of smell that diesel now. And I said, let me go check on it. So I opened the door.
Oh, you didn't.
You know where this
Poor George.
It was so bad. So, I mean, it was like a fog. That's how heavy it was in the office. And so then I moved my truck. I pull it a little bit further down the shack, and of course I open the door to the rig, and then I open the window at the other end, and I get so worked up at it that I come running into him, and I said, do you think I have carbon monoxide poisoning?
He's so ready for retirement. He's counting the days. No more of this crap.
you think I've got carbon dioxide poisoning? He goes, Red, he says, stop being so damn goofy. He says, of course you don't. I said, but what if it builds up in my system and when I go home and then all of a sudden I don't wake up in the middle of the night and I'm sleeping? He goes, Lord have mercy. So I ran over to the night release just to tell him that I opened it all up and that I wasn't going to kill poor George off. And so I said, and I said even to the night relief, I said, do you think I have carbon dioxide poisoning? He looked at me and he said, Red, I really don't think so. You're standing here breathing and talking to me. And I said, oh, right. Okay. So I ran back to George, and he looks at me and he goes, no. I said, what? He goes, no, you did not go next door and ask if you had carbon dioxide poisoning. So we're standing there. I said, damn it, boy. I said, the smell really isn't leaving your shack. And he looks and he goes, Red, because when you moved your truck, you moved it to the other end of the shack where the window's open. So now it's just coming in the other direction.
They're going to put a gate up on location and with a picture of you. Do not let her in. Call first.
So by the time we got it all aired out, we go back in and he says, I do need to relax. You did ask for relaxing evening. Where the hell did it go? And I said, fine, we'll sit and watch some more TV before I leave. And he says, how long? How much longer?
You didn't interrupt him on his Western night, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
So then we were sitting there, I said, he goes, what is it that gets into that head of yours? And I said, well, you know, I do really get ahead of myself, and sometimes I worry a little bit too much, and then, you know, I get on a roll, and before you know, I said, George, did I ever tell you about when I yard guarded my boat? He goes, you what? He goes, let me get some ice cream so that I can at least enjoy this. So he went and got his favorite cherry ice cream with chunks of chocolate in it and chunks of cherry. It's really yummy. So anyways, as we're sitting there, I told him, I said, you know, so what about Bob and me? I said, back in Minneapolis, when I lived there, I had a boat. I had a 32-foot cruiser. And I said, come the fall, fees would get incredibly bad. And I said, you know, I said, every time I got stung, I'd get a little bit more of a reaction. And I said, and then when my ex's good friend got stung on the neck, he'd been getting more and more reactions. He got stung on the neck. And I said, poor dumb M was so stupid that if his buddy hadn't passed out, probably wouldn't realize how bad off he was. And so anyways, he recovered from it. But I said, I never really forgot about that. So every time I saw a bee, I pictured that, and it made me more nervous. And so I said, this one particular time, I was fed up with the bees on my boat because the minute you'd pour a glass of wine and have some lunch, all the bees come out. And I said, I wasn't going to deal with them this day. So I went and I got the whatever triple X yard guard. So my ex and a couple other people are out in the water swimming around, and I sit there, and I'm going to have a glass of wine and just enjoy and relax. And I said, let me just mention something. I have changed an awful lot since coming to the oil field. Yeah. I've toughened up. I've become me in my own skin, because trust me, I wasn't in my own skin in Minneapolis or the life that I was living. Because can you believe this one sentence? I wouldn't even go in the lake without a life jacket and a rope attached to the boat and a floaty. I mean, for the love of God, I've come a long
way. I feel like anyway. We need a life jacket sometimes with you.
So, and people listening to that are going, I had no idea she was this badass goofy. Hey, if you can't laugh,
it's the fumes.
So I is Commie Bastard B, and I'm thinking, I've had it. I've worked too hard, too long, always on. I just want to lay here in the peace and the sun, get a little more sun. And, you know, so I grabbed that damn yard guard, and I started from one corner of the boat, and I went all the way around until I met up with the first corner, only to look up in complete horror that I'd yard guarded and fogged the boat in such a small area, and I was in the middle of it. And George sat there and he said, good Lord. He goes, I said, yeah, and I said, all those that were watching out in the lake watching, all they saw was me make an immediate exit, didn't even have my arm through the life jacket, and just did a full Monty right into the lake. Well, anyway. You know, I've said this for many times. I can be so brilliant, and yet I can be a moron within seconds. It's shocking. But we've gotten these episodes to a decrease. We have.
We're down to floaties now. We don't need a full life jacket. Just the arm floaties are fine.
Oh, my Lord. Well, so I was just, so Mississippi 2, on a particular day when my mind got a little bit too far ahead of itself, I left Wilson one day and got out to his rig, I came into the shack and I sat down and you know, you got to put a little perspective on it. No, I'm not even going to try and put a perspective. I mean, you could try to make some concessions or reasoning behind it. I just plainly have a mind that does not shut off. Plain and simple. And if I'm worrying about something, then it just... Then... Oh, George is listening.
Oh, God.
He said he's just glad that I hung on to the life jacket. Anyways, this particular day, when I got down to Mississippi 2's rig, I flew into the shack, and, you know, I hadn't seen him in a long time, and, you know, my mind works in too many mysterious ways to even begin to understand it half the time. And so, anyways, by the time that I got there, I started prattling on about thinking that he was upset with me and I'd lost his business, and I listed about 20 things that had all come to my mind since leaving Wilson, and that's what he said to me. He said, all that happened in your mind since Williston to Johnson's Corner? And I said, yeah. He said, you got to slow that grinder down. I said, I'm trying, but it is a job being me. Sometimes I would like a vacation from me. I would like to, but I can't. But as long as I direct the energy, and, you know, as George has always said to those offering me a job opportunity, those trying to get to know me and understand me. What does George always say? Harness the energy. But by Saturday afternoon, I was so tightly wound over, I'm asking my bookkeeper just to be able to give me a balance sheet. And the mere fact that a balance sheet threw her over the edge on top of some other things, by the time I got to George's on Saturday and I looked at him and he was having one of those days and he said, you know, he said, I've been working so hard on not letting things get to me. And I said, you know what, George? I said, one day when I grow up, I want to be as strong as you. I'm working hard as well to not let these things completely unnerve me. I said, let's commiserate today because there is far too much stupidity. Remember, a genius swimming in a sea of idiots. It's just too much being, on top. So by the time I'm standing in his office, and Sundance, you see this truck driver trying to find the door to the company man shack, and George is sitting there, and he's holding his head, and he's squeezing his temples, and he goes, Lord, look at this, son. He says, no, George, no, don't finish my hamburger. I want the other half. Please, leave it. He just texted me he's going to eat the half of my hamburger.
I'm going to call and tell him to slobber all over it.
So, he says, look at this truck driver. He can't even find the door to my shack. He goes, I don't know what he's missing. It only says right out front, office, store, company, man. And I said, yeah, it's astounding. I said, the stupidity, it just reigns supreme. And it knows no boundaries. I mean, that's the thing. Stupidity knows no boundaries. And so one time I looked at George and I said, well, George, I'm out of here for a little bit. I'll get out of your hair. I'm going to go and do a few things, but, yeah, I'll be back. But anyway, so when the truck driver walked in, I walked past him, and George says, my burger's gone. That was a really good hamburger. So when the truck driver walks in, I looked right at him, and I said, son, if you'd like to get out alive, I said, keep it short and sweet, and don't aggravate. He is not in the mood. Take my advice. It's sage advice. And he said, thank you. I said, just stick to the program and you'll make it out alive. These poor company men. I mean, the things that they have to tolerate with these sales guys, these drivers, that revolving door, which when I made it.
These salespeople that blow up their kitchens and their microwaves, yes. We hear about it.
Yeah, he's really tortured. I see no pain. As a matter of fact, I was told that I earned my keep tonight because I made those burgers, and they're letting me sit in the night relief company man shack. That's where I'm sitting instead of in my truck tonight. But, you know, I made it out this weekend. I made it to a new rig. And when I got to the rig, the company man, I could hear him in the kitchen. And I knew better, yes, I knew better, than to yell really loud because these guys work hard. And there's days that they just don't want a salesperson. It doesn't matter who you are. And since I hadn't met them before, I didn't know. So I just simply left my business card there. Well, I got down the road, and my phone rang, and I answered it, and he said, now my accountant's beeping in asking if everything's okay. I'm on the radio. That's okay. I'll let her know. And so he said, is this Isabella? And I said, yes. And he said, how did you come and go without making a noise? And I said, well, I did say hello, but I said, I haven't met you, and I didn't know what kind of day you were having. And he said, well, I think I might like to meet you. And I said, well, I'll come back. So I came back, and it took me all of 2 seconds, of course, and I was launched right into the radio show and got talking about what I've been doing in the 4 years that I've been out here. And then I told him, I looked at him, and I said, look, I said, I've got to keep this momentum going. I said, I'm sales girl, and I've got to get out and get more shack business because, you know, I now have a team. And Isabel's Oilfield Services has grown up. We have a team. A cleaning crew, they have uniforms, a van, very professional, and I've got to bring in some more shack cleaning business. And I said, so I've got to keep the momentum. But I said, look, I'm going to be back. And he said, is that a threat or a promise? And I said, both. And I said, and when I come back, there's going to be a test, and I want to test you on listening to my show. So I went to his computer. I put BellaDeAngelo.com on his computer, and I brought up the archive shows, and I played the one called Oxymoron President's Day. And I hit play, and then I hit pause, and I said, there you go. I said, but I got to burn tracks and hit a few more rigs yet in my day. And he said, thank you. And I said, you're welcome. Well, when I made it back this morning, and I asked him, I said, what do you think about the show? And he said, well, it's a lot of honesty and truth, and it's people just speaking their mind. And I said, how do you think that I could improve the show? He said, I don't know. And I said, I'll take any suggestion, which, trust me, that's all we've been talking about. How long has it been, Sundance, that we've been trying to explain the concept of the show?
Oh, do we really want to go into that?
Well, some people are not catching on, but so this morning when I was standing there hanging out with him, and I said, "What do you want me to talk about?" And you know, we're gonna, you know, the thing is there's insanity and madness at every single level. And, you know, the anointed is literally just a gnat. He's just annoying and won't go away. And, you know, what threat and what cost Putin is going to incur for coming into Ukraine. I mean, it's just laughable. It's laughable. And as I stood there and I said, "But, you know, what else should I talk about?" And, I, you know, he said, "Valerie Jarrett." He said, "You know, we already have a female black president in office." He said, "She's the one really pulling the strings behind him." And I told him, I said, "I got to be honest. I said, I really haven't paid that much attention to her." And I said, "That would have stumped me if you guys would have asked me my thoughts on Valerie Jarrett up until," and then when I saw her picture, I said, "Well, sure, she was on O'Reilly just the other night, but, you know, she's the chief advisor from Chicago, you know, hung out with Bill Ayers and the rest of them." The rest of you guys are all going, "Oh, you're just now figuring this one out." Well, I don't lie, and, you know, I don't claim to be the world expert on everything. I mean, I know what I know and what I believe. But anyway, so, and then he was talking about, well, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. And I say this all the time, Sundance, that, and I'm wondering if I'm supposed to call in to Rick Trader to wake him up for this show. I really hope that doesn't become that doesn't become a ritual that I have to do, is to actually call him to come on the show. But anyways, you know, conspiracy theorists, you have to prove the point in which you were talking about. So when you hear things such as Russian troops and Chinese troops being here and in training for coming against us in this country, I mean, I just, you know, I said to him, I said, unless you can prove it, and 15,000, I mean, 15,000 isn't even enough to, George says he's going to go ahead and clean the kitchen. Shocking, isn't it?
Be the last time you go in there for a while.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Not until tomorrow.
There's dessert.
Oh, he's got
there's
the door
dessert.
Locked now. You're not getting back in tonight. It'll be on the front porch. Here, Bella. Go away. I'm sleeping.
But seriously, though, when it does come down to, you know, stating things, I mean, there's conspiracy theory, and then there's a lot of fearing, and there's a lot of fear-mongering, especially going on in this country. But what I really appreciated was the kindness and the story this company man shared with me, which, by the way, we're at the bottom of the hour now, and so much for trying to practice the time clock, Sundance. I just blew
through
30 minutes. So.
Oh, we'll talk about this after the show. I need a mute button here.
Well, if we go much further, I may have to actually go and grab the phone number for Rick Trader. You know, this is going to be embarrassing. If I have to call this grumpy old man up to wake him up for the show, I'll actually have to take the phone outside on location to go get his number. But anyways, you know, this company man was so kind and so sweet, but they all are. That's the message I'm trying to bring to the bigger part of the country and the world that doesn't understand the oil field. They have no clue who we are out here.
That we're real people working for a living?
Yeah. Yeah. That we all have, we all are, you know, hardworking family members. We're Christians. Sure, we like to have a lot of fun. Of course we do. But, you know, shame on us for enjoying what we do and enjoying our hard work. You know, when I was, as I sat there and you know, the next thing he said is, he said, why is it, he goes, how about this? He goes, I watched the Oscars last night, and he said, why is it that everyone thinks movie stars are so intelligent? And I said, okay, I'll answer that one. I said, you know why? I said, because back in the day when movies were movies and there was real talent and we actually had real actors and actresses, I said, you know, we used to look up to the great movie stars that were, they had integrity. They had morals. They had patriotism. They knew and loved and understood, you know, they loved this country, and they were educated. So we respected and we wanted to listen to. We looked forward to listening to the greats like John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart and Clint Eastwood and all those guys. I said, but, you know, the sad reality is Hollywood is what it is now. It's really just an incestuous group of misinformed, wayward liberal. I mean, it's a whole pack of liberals, and the country, the rest of the country that is caught up in the distraction. If this is actually him, I will fall over. I didn't. This will be shocking. So, so I said to him, I said, that's what it is. And I said, I don't even watch real movies. I don't even watch movies anymore. I don't. I said, if I watch anything, it's going to be an old classic or a foreign film. But anyways, then he, on his computer screen, and Rick, I see you, and Q, I'm going to pick you up here in a second. On his computer screen, Sundance, he had pictures flashing of his boys and then of his very large animals that he had hunted in Africa, and then a picture of his swimming pool, and then a picture of his house. And when the picture of his house came up, he said, you know, I designed that house on a computer. I did that whole design before I built it. And then when the picture came up of his swimming pool, he said, you know, I designed that swimming pool for the builder to build my swimming pool. And he said, you know what? He said, those are pictures of me hunting in Africa with my boys. He said, you know, I'm trying to get my boys to understand and to respect women. And I had just gone on one of my rants about not having a boyfriend and the reason why I don't have a boyfriend, you know, the Bible, that it's, my requirements are longer than the Bible and smaller print than the Bible. And I said, and you wonder why I've still been single, because the things that I'm looking for, it's pretty hard to find. And I said, the mere fact that you're teaching your boys how to respect women, I said, that is huge among so many parents in this country. And he said, well, you got to do fun things with them. And I said, absolutely. And he said, you got to teach them the respect for women. I said, absolutely. I said, that's really cool. And as we sat there and talked, and I just said, you know, I said, I'm going to talk about this tonight, so I hope you get a chance to tune in and to listen to it. And he said, I have been hooked up like a sled dog. I said, I know. And then I said, you know what? I got to get burning. I got to get to some rigs today. I said, I've got to get out there. So I said, but I will be back. And he said, is that a threat or a promise? Why do they always take it as a threat? That was fair.
Well, if he knows you in the short amount of time that he met you, I hope he does his homework, because you will be back.
By the way, this is the Bella D'Angelo Show, and the call-in number is 760-259-2312. Is this, did I can't believe you woke up. I was almost going to go and track down that number of yours and wake your grumpy old self up. Are you alert?
Your buddy Joe saved you that little chore. You know, I was really comfortable. I was in the lazy boy, and I had the Afghan over me, and the kitty cat was in my lap. And that Joe disturbed my little kitty cat. But, Bella, what are you talking about? Maybe you should try ChristianMingle.com or something like that. You know,
they wouldn't have a chance.
I called in like 2 minutes ago, and why did you keep me on hold? Because you want me to feel sorry for you because you don't have a boyfriend? Well, maybe Joe and I ought to take up a collection among ourselves and your listeners and buy you a subscription to ChristianMingle.com.
And any of you guys, you know, this is real. Because George knows I did this, and he's about to call in, I feel, if I don't rat myself out on this one. I, at one point, believe it or not, you guys, I felt like I was maybe going to be short on material, right, like that was ever going to happen. But I signed on a Match.com. It is frightening.
So not Match.com, you were talking about the Bible and things like this. Well, Christian Mingle, there you go, kiddo.
But
do you want to get serious? You want to get serious? I mean get serious about politics, not serious
oh.
in the manner of which you're talking, you know.
It's just going to take a little work. We have to work on discipline a little bit because, you know, I can't stay
disciplined
or un...
Are you using discipline with me? Would you like to talk to my 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade teachers about discipline?
You wouldn't want to talk to my teachers because I was very difficult to discipline. Shocking, I know.
Shocking. Hey, Bella, who's Joe?
Yeah.
Who's Joe?
Joe Butner is a... Huh?
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, Joe Butner is his name, and he's a political activist down in Florida, and he works on the... He's contacted a lot of... Majority of these guests, these political guys that have come on the show, he does my correspondence during the day, and he wakes you up from your nap to come on my radio show.
Is he your man Joe? Does all your dirty work and your house cleaning and your bookkeeping and your telephoning and all the dirty jobs you don't? Because he's really a nice guy, that guy Joe is. But he disturbed my kitty cat tonight. We are having a nice little siesta, and the phone rings, and it's Joe. So anyway, Joe, you do a great job.
He does a super job, and you know
what?
Well, and you know what? He called me this morning, you guys, because I spared you a meltdown, Rick. I got to another one of those points where, you know, you look at the numbers of the listenership, and the numbers have gone down tremendously since signing on or moving forward with Salem. And I was just beside myself, and I said, you know, we got to get back to the old format. Well, Joe called me this morning, God bless him, at 8:30 this morning, and he said, you know what, Bella? He said, I figured out what we need to do. I really need to work more on promoting. He said, you know what, the guests will come, and I said, but we got to get the listenership up, and he's just really excited, and, you know, that's what he does full, you know, all day long, and he's doing a fabulous job, so I couldn't do it without you, and I really appreciate
it,
especially
for Rick. Does he have a secret crush on you? Is he another one of these men that have a secret crush on you?
Oh, Lord, not another one. I've been beating them off all day. Oh, and anyways.
Oh, anyway, what the power of a woman, yeah. You know, I've often thought, what would it be like to be an attractive woman and have men hitting on you all the time? And, you know that the crosses you must bear. It must be terrible.
Well, here's where it really drives me crazy. It's complimentary when it's coming from a respected, you know, respectable gentleman that respects you. And Rick, you know this because you've lived this battle with me. The part that really chaps
me is...
I
fight this battle all the time, you know.
It's when I'm not taken seriously, especially on this show. It drives
me
over the
edge. Do you
want to
get serious? I asked you that before. Do you want to get serious? We got some serious stuff we could talk about.
Let's bring it on, brother, because I know it's insane. And I just want to say at the last, you know, when I was with Bobby Ricky at the last rig today, and I will say, though, because, you know, when we've been
Bobby
talking
Ricky,
about Ricky
you mean
McDroyer,
there's really a guy by the name of Bobby Ricky? You're sure you're not a little dazed and confused and it's Ricky Bobby? By the way, seriously, you know, my name is Rick, right? So you can call me Ricky. You know what my kitty cat's name is?
No.
It's Bobby. So you are now talking to Ricky and Bobby. Because Bobby's still on my lap.
Well, let me just to say this shout out to Ricky Bobby because I said to him today when I came into his rig, I said, you should be proud of me. I said, normally hearing about the Russians and the Chinese army coming after us on our own territory would have sent me over the edge. But I said, you know what? I'm building up a tolerance to these fearmongers and the ones that are ready to jump ship and think that it's all over with. I said, I built up a tolerance and I'm stronger. And I know there's a lot of conspiracy theory. And Rick, you and I have talked about that. And yep. I don't want conspiracy theory on here. You have to be able to prove what we're talking about and dispel the myths and spread the truth. And you had two interviews that we're going to play today. And we've got some people that are the one I, you know, she's doing and a patriot speaking up for us.
Yep.
And her rights that are. So why don't we go ahead and set it up? Rick Trader is with the Conservative Commando Radio Show.
All right. And we had an opportunity this past week on the Conservative Commandos Radio Show to talk to a couple of really great Americans. One is Kathleen Willey. Now, you might say, Kathleen who? Who is that? Well, Kathleen Willey is a former White House volunteer. And she accused in the 1990s, 1993, she accused Bill Clinton of sexual assault. And this is the story. Kathleen Willey and her husband were from Arkansas, and they were big Bill Clinton supporters. They helped get this man into the White House. But as things happen in life, you know, you have good times and you have bad times. Well, she and her husband fell into some financial problems, and she went to Bill Clinton, their friend of the family, the man who they helped get into the White House. She was working as a volunteer aide at that time, and she was looking for a full-time paying job. Now, in a time of crisis, she went to her friend. She went to her friend, Bill Clinton. Well, what happened during that meeting was Kathleen Willey says that Bill Clinton sexually assaulted her. For years, she kept quiet about it until she was subpoenaed to testify in the Paula Jones case. And what she is claiming, that Hillary Clinton led a clandestine war against her and all the other women who accused Bill Clinton of sexual assault and rape. And so she has come out and said that Hillary Clinton is the war on women. Now, what she's going to talk about in her interview, why it's important is Hillary Clinton is going to run for president in 2016, and we have to vet this woman as strongly as we can. So with that, Bella, why don't you play the tape?
And it's under Catherine, would it be? Catherine?
Kathleen Willey.
Okay, let me pull up the file here as I was... But see, the only thing that I want to add when we talk about sexual harassment, and this is probably going to get, there it is, probably going to get me a lot of heat from the women, but let me just put this out there, what I have always said, and I haven't listened to the interview yet, but this is nothing against Kathleen whatsoever. This is a side topic, but being a woman in the oil field, you have to take 100% responsibility, I do, in the interaction and things that are said. But anyways, here it is, Kathleen Willey interview, and I will hit play.
This is Congressman Alan West, and you're listening to the Conservative Commando Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with your host, Rick Trader, and your co-host, me, John Mosley, for the day. We have our next guest on the line, Kathleen Willey, the author of the book, Target, Caught in the Crosshairs of Bill and Hillary Clinton, published by WND Books by Kathleen Willey in 2007, with endorsements by Ann Coulter, Christopher Hitchens, and Monica Crowley. Kathleen Willey was a Democratic activist who, with her husband, helped send Bill and Hillary Clinton to the White House in 1992, who have been longtime Democratic supporters and helped the Clintons, but unfortunately had a bit of a wrong turn along the way. And we're very honored to have her talk about the current situation here with us today. Welcome to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show, Kathleen Willey.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
I'm glad to hear. It's a shame always to have someone talking because of something bad that has happened. And I think what I want to do is talk about one aspect of what you raised and let you share as much as you wish about some of the bad things that happened there. But you spoke to me in something that that I should have known. I worked at Judicial Watch with Larry Klayman, and although it wasn't directly on that, we were very much aware of a lot of the things going on. And I had completely forgotten the role that Hillary Clinton, presumably the Democratic nominee for president in 2016, had in directly implementing the Bill Clinton phenomenon. And you brought me back to that, and I thought that was really important.
That was her role. She decided early on, she knew of his problems with women and that he had a wandering eye, and she even sent her father and her brother to Little Rock to keep an eye on him before they got married. She knew before they got married that this was an ongoing problem, and rather than try to fix it or try to help him or to get counseling together or whatever the things that you do to get to the bottom of his kind of behavior, she just decided that the best way to handle it was to get rid of all the women who just happened to cross paths with him. You know, the innocent women like me who just wrong place at the wrong time. And it's been well documented what her role has been in every one of these incidences.
Yes, and not just in attacking those complaining, which we'll get into, but I've seen it in many respects. When I was at Judicial Watch, Larry, they took the deposition of Nolanda Hill, an associate of Ron Brown, and documented under oath there and in other places how she was really the mastermind of many of the things that were going on, the fundraising scandals, a lot of the shady deals, trading places on trade missions for donations and things like that. So today the idea is, oh, you can't talk about any of that because, well, you can imagine if you just happen to have an unfortunate brother, you happen to be married to a scoundrel, it's not fair. I think even Mitt Romney said not to, you know, don't talk about Bill Clinton, Hillary, you know, in terms of Hillary Clinton running. But you don't think so.
That's not the point here. That's not why I decided to speak up about this. I am not, and I've been accused of this, and I want to say this very strongly. I am not here to bring up all of the sort of details of all of these things that were involved with people like Monica Lewinsky and Paula Jones and me and the things that were done to us by President Clinton. The reason that I spoke up is because Hillary Clinton is clearly running for president. There's no doubt in my mind that she's going to run. All of this, we're thinking about it, and I haven't made up my mind. She made up her mind a long time ago that she was going to run for president. This has always been the plan. Her platform is going to be women's issues. And on top of that, this so-called bogus attack against the Republicans, this war on women. Hillary Clinton is the war on women. What Hillary Clinton did to women like me, who, like I said, just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, is illegal, is what it is. And we were terrified. We were threatened. Our homes and apartments were broken into. I mean, it was a clear campaign of terror for women like me, who happened to have these experiences with Bill Clinton, to keep our mouths shut. And I was threatened. I think the scariest part for me was 2 days before my deposition in Paula Jones' case. I was called as a witness in that sexual harassment case, that I was threatened by a stranger, by a man out here where I live. And I don't live in a neighborhood. It's not a development. It's very rural. You have to find, a little hard to find me. It was obvious that I had been followed. A lot of things had happened before that when I realized that, you know, that this campaign was going on and they were out to try to just scare me and to keep me quiet. And my children were threatened, and the children of another friend were threatened that morning. And the clear message to me was to keep your mouth shut. You're just not getting the message here. Keep your mouth shut and go into that deposition and commit perjury, lie under oath. And that's what they wanted, and that's what they tried to do to me, to quiet me. And that's the reason that I'm speaking up. This is not about Bill Clinton's behavior. That's behind us, okay? That doesn't need to be brought up anymore. I'm trying to look forward, and I'm looking at a woman who wants to be president, who's going to run on women's issues and attack the Republicans for the war on women, when clearly she's the war on women, like people like me, and there are many of us. There are a lot of women out there that we haven't heard about. There's a lot of women out there who don't want needs to come out. There's a lot of women out there who've gone through the same kind of treatment. They're scared to death. And as long as Bill Clinton is alive, he's going to keep doing these things. And her idea is to look the other way and attack the women, who for the most part are just innocent. That's why I'm speaking up. Is that what we want for president? Is that what we want for the first woman president in this country? I don't think so. There's so many more women out there that are more qualified than she is that don't play these dirty tricks like she does. And it's interesting, too, because since I've been talking about this, I haven't seen any denials anywhere.
Yeah, you said what I was going to ask next is that is basically don't think she's the best woman for the job of the available out there. And I think you do have to have higher standards, you know, believe more in women, as I think I do, than some people are willing to put up with.
I would hope.
There are some very good women out there.
I mean, a woman is running for president is going to face a whole lot of, she's just going to face a whole lot of different questions that men do. That's just the nature of the game. Here we have a clearly dishonest woman whose idea of taking care of a problem that should be taken care of under her own roof is to go out and threaten the women that just weren't guilty of anything except being in the wrong place at the wrong time, like I said. That's her idea of taking care of the problem. This could have been fixed a whole lot of, a long time ago. I mean, it's not for us to wonder about what goes on in another person's marriage. I mean, there are a lot of things that it's really none of our business. However, when it goes outside of the marriage and you have somebody like Hillary Clinton threatening you and you know exactly where it's coming from and it's been documented, it's time to talk about that, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's time to talk about that. But I'm not seeing any denial from anybody. I think the other thing that probably worries me more than anything else is that, I mean, that was 15 years ago, and there are a lot of young women today who are going to vote who don't know the whole story. All they think about is, boy, this is going to really be cool to elect the first woman president, and I'm going to cast my vote for that, and I understand that. It would be cool to do that, but they need to know her history and exactly what she does to other women. That's not the person I want in the Oval Office. I don't know about you, but that's not who I want. I mean, if a woman's going to be the first woman president, I would like to see that she's got morals and faith and that she's loyal to her sisters. Puts that message out there. If she wants to run on women's issues, there's a lot to run on. There's a lot of things that women have to deal with today still. And I guess the reason that I've been talking is just I think the young women who don't know anything about these stories need to be educated about them.
Well, and sometimes, you know, when we do get close to someone in that other people see in the news, and maybe sometimes it can be a little unfair, but when someone uses power, you do have to wonder how they would act if they got a lot more of it. Do you see, as you say, the example of the best woman to be the first president? Does it say anything to you about how someone would use power if they had it?
Well, you have to wonder, wouldn't you? I mean, look what she's done so far.
The studio's telling me I have to break. Could you hold that answer through about 2 minutes? I'm so sorry, I didn't get that.
All right, we are going to take a little break right now. You're listening to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with Jonathan Mosley and Rick Trader, and we're coming to you from the CCRS studios, that of WNJC 1360, and around the world on the Internet. And if you would like to hear a rebroadcast of today's show at 10:30 p.m. East Coast time this evening, please go to patriotsride.org. That's patriotsride.org. Or you can hear a rebroadcast of today's show tomorrow afternoon by going to vigilantlibertyradio.us. Please don't go away. John and I will be back to continue our conversation with Kathleen Willey. And welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with Jonathan Mosley and Rick Trader. And we're joined today by Kathleen Willey. And Kathleen, thanks for holding through the break. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
You know, Kathleen, I hear you, and I agree with you. But coming into 2016, what I'm afraid of, and as you're talking about the younger women who don't know about the past reputations of the Clintons. What I'm concerned about, and I would like you to talk a little bit about, is the people that will come with the yes, but that was Bill Clinton. It is not Hillary. But Kathleen, I believe that this goes a lot to her character. Number one, I think she enabled a lot of Bill Clinton's habits and activities to go on. She also, as you say, was largely responsible for trying to shut women like you up from telling your story, I think that should say a lot about the character of Hillary Clinton as president, somebody who cannot be trusted by the American people. What's your take?
I agree. That's why I'm speaking up. It does speak to her character. I mean, this is the problem. If he's got, he has this problem all along. It's no secret, okay? He's got a wandering eye, and worse than that even. Take Juanita Broderick, for instance. I know Juanita Broderick. I've talked to her. She told me the story of what he did to her, and this woman is not lying, which is, I can tell you. This woman is not lying. If that's the case, and she's telling the truth like I said she is, as far as I'm concerned, then he's a rapist. For a woman to cover that up, who's nothing but power hungry, is just plain wrong. And that's the problem here. And all of the things that's so bothersome to me, it's so hard for me to accept, is the fact that the women's groups now and all of these other women don't pay any attention to any of that. It's all about getting Hillary elected no matter what.
You know, Kathleen, I would think that would have to be extremely frustrating for you to deal with.
It is.
That these other women's groups are totally ignoring your side and just running to her side. They're running to, I don't know, to get favor with her political power?
Well, who knows? The thing of it is, if you think about what exactly has she done that's been all that great? The only thing that she's done that's been all that great is to ride on other men's coattails. That's what she's done. That's why she kept Bill Clinton around, because she realized early on power that he has. And say what you will about him, everybody talks about it, he does have a lot of charisma. Don't ask me why. I mean, he just walks into the room,
right?
And when the two of them together, they just suck the oxygen out of the room. But he does, and she realized that early on, and she knew that she was going to get what she wanted to get through him, and through Obama, for that matter.
Right.
I mean, exactly what is it that Hillary Clinton done that's so spectacular as far as First Lady or as Secretary of State?
Right.
I mean, where are the answers? Talk about character. Let's talk about Benghazi, then. Talk about that?
Which we have a lot here in Conservative Commandos Radio Show. Kathleen, listening to what you just said about her following men's coattails, do you believe that it is she who actually pushed him into being the president? If it wasn't for Hillary Clinton, that he would never be president? And I know we're deviating from the topic a little bit, but I've never spoke with someone like yourself that has been so close to the Clintons before. And this is a question I've had for quite some time, so this is why I'm asking.
Well, it's a good point. I haven't thought about that now that you bring it up. But, well, I think certainly we never saw her discourage him from that. You know, she became pretty active as the First Lady when he was the governor.
Right.
And maybe that's when she really saw what he had to offer in the political world and the power that he had, and she decided she was going to hang on to that.
Yeah. You know, another question that I've been thinking about, Kathleen, since we first spoke yesterday, in all this time, in all these years, in all the interviews and talks that you have done on this subject, was there ever a question that has gone unasked? Maybe you thought, why didn't they ask me this question? Is there that question out there that you've never been asked?
I don't think so. That's a good question. I have to think about that. Not that I can think of right offhand.
Okay.
I think the thing that just bothers me the most is that I have talked to, and the women that you've seen that have gone through the thing that I have on the public stage like I did, but you know, I never was going to come out with this story. That was not something that I was going to.
I'm glad you did, because I think it's very important that we explore the character of people that want to lead this country. I think the mess that we are in right now with Obama is because nobody ever vetted this man before he became president. Liked him. He was a nice guy. So I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate, you know, it's very seldom that a person who has been so close to a president or a first lady like yourself has the guts to come out and say the truth and what really happened without sugarcoating it.
I've always been one who asks questions. I've always been that way. You know, when it comes to voting, I think that educating yourself about whoever it is that you want to vote for or the opposition is something that we need to do as citizens, is ask questions and expect answers. Go as far as you can before you go into the voting booth and vote for somebody. Rather than, I mean, now everything is so stylized and everything is so, I mean, there's no spontaneity anymore in political campaigns. And you think about it, everybody is walking around with a camera. Every single person you know now has a camera. They can either take a picture or a video. And if you catch a candidate just in an off moment or just not on guard like they're supposed to be, that could be the end of their careers. Well, yeah. We've seen that. And so you don't really see the real person, I don't think. I mean, we've seen, look at Mitt Romney, since he lost the election, we've seen the side of him that we didn't see when he was running.
Yeah. Now, Kathleen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are right up against the end of our time. We're going to get kicked off the air here in a minute. I would love to continue this conversation with you, and I know John has more questions, too. Could we get you back sometime in the near future to continue this? Because I see Hillary Clinton as a real danger to this country and must be stopped. I think people are spending too much time focusing on Obama now. We got him. We've had him for 5 years. We're going to have him for 3 more years. There's nothing we can do about that, but we can stop another dangerous person from taking the Oval Office in the name of Hillary Clinton. Could you come back sometime? Would you do that for us?
Yes, it would be my pleasure to come back.
All right. Thank you so much. Kathleen
Willey,
you have a great story. And where can people get your book real quick?
Amazon.com.
Thank you for joining us. Hey, John, I'm sorry to do that, but, you know, I just wish we had more time here. We're out of time, John Mosley. I want to thank you for being my co-host today, but for right now, we're out of time. We've got to run. We've got to go. Take care. God bless, and we'll see you next week on the radio.
So, Bella D'Angelo, you there
with
me? Okay, yes. Let's try to put yourself in Kathleen Willey's place. You go to someone who you believe is a friend for help, and you were there for that friend when they needed help. In fact, you helped that friend get into the Oval Office of the White House, and you and your husband are in some financial troubles. It's a very difficult time in your life. Instead of your friend responding to your needs, what he does is he sexually assaults you.
Well, I think you're going to be surprised by my reaction and just some of my comments and stand on this. First of all, when we broke into this, and I've said this for a long time because this is one of the things that, and again, this isn't against Kathleen, but women as a whole, the problem that I have is I really don't understand, you know, unless you are incapacitated in some shape or form, I don't understand how they are, and I don't know the details of this one, but, I live in a place that is dominated by men with no women. We have very few women. As a matter of fact, Rick, you said it to me one day. You asked if there even were women outside of me here in the oil field. So I'm in a pretty tough, you know, territory, but anytime you're encounter with another individual and if they're doing something uncomfortable, I don't understand. Again, I wasn't there in her situation, unless you have the details, but I put it to saying, and if you hear I often hear women say, but he's in a position of power. I didn't feel comfortable. I don't know. I stand on the ground that we have to be 100% responsible for our actions and how we respond to actions. I mean, I'm around married men all the time, and, you know, it, part of a man's nature is propositioning, and then it's the way that the male mind is a lot of times, and it's your responsibility how you take it and how you stand up for yourself. And I know you're sitting there going, you probably didn't expect to hear this from me.
Well, no, I didn't expect to hear it from you, but I think of her position. As I mentioned, you know, this was bad times. These were bad times for her and her husband. And she went to a friend for help who she had helped.
And I think just the fact of Clinton's response to her, I think that in and of itself probably shocked her to the point where he was able to do what he did by groping her, by trying to fondle her, by trying to have sex with her in the Oval Office. But I thought she made some, during the interview, I thought she made some very good points. Number one, she said she wasn't there to talk about the past. You know, the past is past. What she's coming out to talk about now is Hillary Clinton and how she believed that Hillary Clinton led a campaign to discredit women like herself and other women who stood up to Bill Clinton or was sexually harassed. And there were even a couple of women who have been who have claimed to have been raped by Bill Clinton. And yet it was Hillary Clinton, Kathleen Willey said she is the war against women because she led the campaign to discredit them and to stop them from testifying. You know, I also, I also thought it was very, very interesting in the interview that she said, as I feel, that we must vet this candidate. We must bring out these facts about Hillary Clinton and how we must educate younger women who weren't around in those days, who just sees Hillary Clinton and how the left talk about her and idolize her, that there's another side about Hillary Clinton. And I thought she made a very good point, is that throughout her life, all she has done is ride the coattails of a man.
You know, I talk about this all the time. I was talking about this just the other night on the show. You know, women, first of all, you got two sides to this. Okay, first of all, you've got a culture that has gotten away from morals and integrity and values, and cheating is an everyday practice. It's really not even frowned upon. And quite honestly, you know, Monica made out pretty good in the whole deal. I mean, it's sick as it is and twisted, but it's a fact and it's reality. And the other piece of it is, women have been brought up to be, you know, to idolize the man, and the biggest day in a woman's life is getting married and to, you know, to live off of a man. I was talking to a company man the other day and saying, teaching them into being these whiny, emotional, checkbook-eating queens. And they need to learn independence and self-reliance and self-responsibility, and they should be financially set up before they even look into a relationship. But we're so far down the road of morality, integrity, and people and women standing separate and responsible. The biggest part is, and what we really need to go after is, you're right, we've got Obama for 3 years. Hillary is going to run. She is the biggest threat. And, you know, we've got to go back to getting people to understand, going after their pocketbooks and getting them to understand, you know, financially where we will be at as women and men if this regime continues to stay in power. Because I know that beating the drum against, you know, Hillary going after these women, I mean, I can just hear my company men out here going, well, you know, there's bigger crimes that this woman has committed. And what we have to do is we have to go after her record. We have to go after what she supports. We have to go after the fact that this country is at a financial crisis with, you know, another stimulus being threatened to be spent, higher taxation, all of these insane socialist programs that are going to continue to destroy and cripple this country. And no matter what, Hillary is going to just continue down the same war path as what this administration already has in place.
You know, Bella, you brought up two good points. You talk about her record and what she stands for. Number one, she doesn't have a real record to run on, in my opinion. What record does she have to run on while she was first lady? Well, when she was first lady, during the first term, it was Hillary Clinton that she was pushing. At that time, obviously, she was stopped. Bill Clinton was stopped from instituting Hillary Care, getting it through Congress. And we see what a disaster Obamacare is now, and Obama is what Hillary Care was proposed to be. And
What does she, her record as Secretary of State, I don't think was such a great success. I think the biggest thing that happened to her while she was Secretary of State was Benghazi. And we still don't know the truth about Benghazi, but what we do know about Benghazi is not very flattering to Hillary Clinton. And what does she stand for? Well, what does Barack Obama stand for? I think that she would be another Barack Obama with a radical left-leaning agenda.
Of course she is. I mean, when you go to Benghazi, what we know is that our troops asked for help. The call went out. When they made the answer back that they did not have time, and with her standing there and screaming, our men are dead, and who cares? I mean, you have to go back and what record? You're right. She doesn't have a record to run on. All she has been about, and I say this all the time, she's got a hatred. Think about this. And let's go back to a little bit of the mindset again of a liberal, especially a female liberal, that is a man-hater to begin with. And their mental disorder is beyond, and they tend to be, they tend to have a lot of anger to begin with. And so she's turned this anger around that she has against her own husband to what she claims she is the best victim to all these women that have come in. I mean, the second time, it's your shame that you stuck with them. I mean, but then to go after and take all that hatred towards all the women when she knows what he's about. I mean, come on. And all she's doing is directing that anger towards the other women, and yet, again, she is the cheerleader and the head of this whole, I mean, she's just going to continue all of the programs. There is nothing, because they're running on a success that they are trying to feed to us. They are running on the success of economic recovery, of jobs coming back, everything that they want us to believe without the masses. But I say this a lot. I do believe a lot more people are beginning to understand and wake up, just like I was talking about earlier, Joe. I don't know if you missed it when I was saying there was a young black gentleman. I don't even know if he was 20 years old at the gas station the other day. And I asked him about this administration. And he said, I would rather go back to Bill Clinton. He maybe wanted a blowjob, but he took care of this country. That was his perspective.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing that part of the conversation this evening.
Well, that's from a young man who looks at where this country is, and he says he'd rather take Bill Clinton. And I say this, I think Bill Clinton liked this country for what he was doing. We are nowhere near we are in such a catastrophic, he almost looks like he could lean a little right compared to what this administration is doing to this country.
Well, Bella, I think you bring up a very good point. Also, if I could also say, I think you're right about Bill Clinton. I think Bill Clinton really loved this country. I don't think Barack Obama does. But I also will say, I think that Bill Clinton has sold out. He has sold his soul by his support of this administration. I really do. Hey, Bella, I don't know how much time we got this evening, but do we want to go on to the next interview?
And what is the gentleman's name? Set it up.
Okay, this is Congressman Louis Gohmert. Congressman Gohmert, he's one of my favorite guests that we have on the Conservative Commandos radio show. And Congressman Gohmert he represents the 1st District in Texas. And, Bella, I think we conservatives are under attack from two sides. The first is obvious. That is the left. The second, maybe is not so obvious for a lot of people, and that is we are being attacked by the mainstream Republican Party. Now, what Congressman Gohmert has done is he has set up a political action committee to defend candidates against the establishment Republican attacks, like that of, guess what? Our very good friend, John Boehner, Speaker of the House, like Senator John McCain. So we've recently had an opportunity to talk with Congressman Gohmert, and when I say we, I mean my very good friend, Anna Little, myself, and
from that, why don't you play the interview, Bella?
You got it.
We do have our very special guest with us, and Anna Little, the honor of the introduction is yours, so please take it away.
Okay, listeners, we have the honor this afternoon to be speaking with the one and only Texas Congressman Louie Gohmert from District 1 in Texas. He's in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. He's the vice chair of the Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. And prior to being elected to serve in Congress, Louie was elected to three terms as a district judge in Smith County, Texas. So guess what, listeners? You can trust Louie Gohmert. He also served as the Chief Justice of Texas's 12th Court of Appeals. Congressman Gohmert, welcome back to the Conservative Commandos radio show.
Always good to talk to you, Anna. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for your leadership in the House of Representatives. Thank you for representing conservatives like our listeners and ourselves. We need your leadership, and we are so very grateful.
Well, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. You're getting the truth out there. So thanks to you and Rick. Appreciate you.
Well, you know, talk to us. It seems that there's quite a hullabaloo going on down there. That's my word for it, down in Washington, D.C. And I know that we've got a Republican-controlled House of Representatives, but that doesn't always mean that things go the way that conservatives would like. And it seems you're starting a political action committee, so let's give you the floor. Tell us what's going on.
Well, you've heard it. You guys have talked about it. You've had to react to it, but there are people in the Republican Party who consider themselves to be a part of the establishment. And we've had establishment people, including our speaker, that have said, you know, they were at war with the Tea Party, not understanding that there is nothing really special about Tea Party members, except that nearly all of them I run into, they pay income tax, they have a vested interest in making sure the government is more efficient, doesn't waste and get involved in fraud, and that we're not losing our freedom. So what's wrong with that? Giving a more efficient government, taking away less freedom, I like that. But there are some that think that threatens their control, and so they've been at war with people in the Tea Party. So it wasn't an original thought I had. It was a page out of Jim DeMint's book back when he was a senator, starting the Senate Conservative Fund to help conservatives who were under attack or weren't going to get any help from the establishment senators in the Republican Party. And so I started Go Conservative. It's a PAC. And that's Go is G-O-H, conservative.com. And that is going to be used to help conservatives. And I've had some that have reacted negatively. Wait a minute, you're declaring war on establishment or mainstream? No, we are the mainstream. But others have declared war on people who simply want to represent their district. And, you know, we're told often enough, gee, you know, you've got to make some allowances for some congressmen who have to vote their district, and they have a more moderate district. But then they don't say that about people in conservative districts. They say, well, you've got to vote moderate. You've got to help the team. Wait a minute. Let's help the team by doing what we promised we would do when we got elected. So GoConservative.com is Go, G-O-H, conservative.com, is what we're raising money for to try to help conservative members who are not going to get help from mainstream Republican or not mainstream, but establishment Republicans, and they're not going to really get help out there fundraising or get direct giving to them. So that's what I want to do. I want to help people that just want to stand up for America and the people in their district.
Well, I'm so glad that you're deciding to do this because, you know, as a conservative candidate myself, at times I've felt that the establishment is not comfortable with my candidacy. And when an establishment is not comfortable with the candidacy, they don't support it.
for one reason
or
another.
Sometimes they can even get vicious and going after your contributors or people that are helping. We've had situations where that has happened, where establishment Republicans would not only not help, they would go after people that are just wanting to make a difference. And y'all understand, I mean, Republicans should not be afraid of the Tea Party, for heaven's sake. It was the Tea Party getting organized and doing the groundwork to win the majority in 2010. Hear people in the Republican leadership saying, well, we got to remember, we can't afford to lose the independents. Well, the Tea Party folks are pretty independent. They want to go with somebody that's going to stand up and do what they promised when they got elected, no matter what their party is. And that's pretty independent. And the people that they will lose, as they did in 2012, when they bring forth a moderate that doesn't keep his word or keeps changing his word, they're going to have millions of people stay home, which is exactly what happened in 2012. Barack Obama would not have won a second term if so many millions of conservatives didn't just stay home because they didn't feel like they were really given a choice. And here we are, after the lessons of John McCain and Mitt Romney, the ultimate moderates, now we're being told again, gee, we can't win the Senate unless we put up, the moderates, so-called, like Mitt Romney or John McCain. We couldn't possibly win with a conservative. That's what everybody said about Ronald Reagan, and look what he did.
Well, this is a country that operates under the supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States.
Well, now, wait a minute, Anna. It used to.
That's true. Oh, that's so true.
But you've got a Supreme Court that doesn't even operate under the Constitution. Like in the decision on Obamacare, here you got a brilliant guy like John Roberts, and sells his soul, and on page 15 of his opinion, he comes to the conclusion that, gee, since the Anti-Injunction Act would prohibit the Supreme Court from having jurisdiction to rule on this case, if that mandate were a tax, then we're going to find that it's not a tax for these purposes. It's a penalty. Congress called it a penalty. The administration called it a penalty. You only get hit with it if you don't do what is required. So clearly it is a penalty. Since it's a penalty, we, the Supreme Court, have jurisdiction and you have standing. So now we'll go forward and decide whether the Obamacare Act is constitutional. And then they get around page 59 and he says, but since it's a tax and not a penalty, then it is constitutional. I mean, one of the most dishonest and dishonorable opinions you could imagine. That's not operating under our Constitution. That is a Supreme Court run amok. So I appreciate what you're saying. We're supposed to be a country that operates under the Constitution and follows the law and be a nation of laws. But some people have really lost their way at the top of our branches.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I'm so glad you got the opportunity to explain all of that. That's what we call doublespeak in my house.
And for somebody that is like me, that has written opinions, who has wrestled with other justices and trying to come up with proper language, I was shocked when I read that opinion. I thought, this is dishonest. It's hypocritical. I mean, the doublespeak to say it's clearly not a tax in one area and then clearly is a tax in another area, it was unbelievable. And those are the kind of things that we have got to call people to account for. And, and that's the only way that you will discourage people from getting that far afield from honesty and from the Constitution.
And we're speaking with Congressman Louie Gohmert from the 1st District of Texas. Congressman Gohmert, thanks for joining us today.
Sure, love talking to you.
Congressman Gohmert, a week or so ago, some very disturbing news came out of the House of Representatives, the passing of the debt limit once again. I mean, what is in the water down in Washington where they think that you can just continue to spend and spend and spend and borrow and borrow and borrow and place the burden of this on future generations? Congressman, I'm never going to live long enough to pay what I owe, my share of the debt. My good friend, Mr. John Forsyth, Jr., behind me here working the boards, I put him in my will. He's going to inherit my debt. Congressman, it's totally unfair what we're doing to our country and to our future generations.
Well, and we've talked about it, but it really is immoral. It is immoral for one generation to be so out of control that they spend trillions of dollars more than they have and force future generations to have to come up with it. I mean, you know, we're the, and it's really tragic, but we're the first American generation who has not made it our goal to make the country better for our children. Instead, this selfish, narcissistic generation, or at least the leaders of it, have led us into spending children and grandchildren's money, and it is immoral. It is just so wrong to leave that kind of debt behind. And so you bring up the debt ceiling. Our leadership said, gee, we have been talking about this, and we don't believe we can ever get 218 Republicans in the House to vote to increase the debt ceiling, because we have 20 or so of you guys that will never vote for a debt ceiling increase under any circumstances. Well, that's not true. I also care enough about my country. If you put something like the cut, cap, and balance, you know, where we know that there's a chance to get total control of the overspending in the future, and it's something that's a major game changer, then, yeah, I would vote for a debt ceiling increase if we could have that kind of insurance, not a game, but true insurance against this continuing in the future. But I went up to some of our leaders and explained, look, you can't say that some of us are always going to be no. You've got to put something decent on it. We could vote, most of us could vote for a debt ceiling increase if you had it a requirement that the House and Senate pass a balanced budget amendment. I think in talking to a number of our guys, if you put on what Ron Paul pushed for year after year after year and never happened, but an audit the Fed, mm-hmm. Man, that, they are so protective and so private, and we have no idea what all they're doing, what kind of grave they're digging for us financially. That was probably going to get enough votes that we could have done it. You know, something major, something a real game changer. And yet, even after going around and talking to people like me who normally vote no and say, could you vote for a debt ceiling increase if we did this, that, or the other, and then reporting that back to the whip team and to our leaders, they still announced, snap, we can't do it. Basically, they talked among themselves instead of going to each of those no votes. And they didn't even try. So they said, you know, we'll find 30 of us to vote for this and vote with all the Democrats and we'll get it raised. Well, I just think that's a total abdication. We're in the majority. America gave us the majority. We need to lead and not follow.
Thank you. Oh, my gosh, I've been waiting to hear that. Thank you.
Well, I mean, don't y'all agree that if, yeah, you and I are against debt ceiling increases at all, but if you put something on there that is a true game changer for the future, then, yeah, I will do that compromise to that extent, but not just
it's called moving the ball down the field, right?
Instead of kicking the can down the road, we're actually moving the ball forward, exactly.
That's right.
So they try to paint us as being 100% no all the time, and that's not right. We're willing to compromise and work, but not compromise on principle.
Congressman, I just wanted to bring up one other issue because I know that you're going to speak to it so strongly. This is a government that is supposed to be run for and by the people. Right? And it was, the whole revolution was begun by a tea party, right?
Mm-hmm.
We said, we're not going to take your tea. We don't want this tax. Forget about it, right? So we're
That's
just
right.
getting back to basics here. And, you know, each one of these representatives, whether they're leadership or not, they're supposed to be representing we, the people who are in charge. So how is it that we end up having a war on the very people we're supposed to represent?
Well, and I wish I could speak to it strongly, but I do not understand it. All I can think is that it must be a threat to power, to the power of people who are more concerned about keeping power than they are preserving the union. And it's not really understandable for me. I don't see how people can be so blind. But I understand why you'd have, you know, Huffington Post and some of the mainstream and leftists who are just completely, they sold their souls to support the president, the Democratic leftist causes. So I can understand them going after Tea Party people, but for conservatives, or first before so-called pseudo-conservatives or Republicans, how could you not recognize these are not crazy people? These are people that believe in exactly, you know, what John Kennedy did about lower taxes, believe in having less government, not more, believe in compassion and helping people by giving them freedom and giving them opportunity and not putting them into servitude by committing so much of the money that they've never even made yet. I mean, no one should be threatened by that, but we do have establishment people who are, and all I can figure is because they're more concerned with keeping power than they are about preserving the union.
Well, Congressman, you and I and our listeners, we all know where the power really is. It's in the people, and it's through our Creator. And I think that your leadership with your GO PAC, your GO Conservative PAC, is going to be just the solution we need. You are the solution, man. So tell us again about your PAC as we're coming close to the end of our segment here.
Okay. It is GoConservative.com, but GO is spelled G-O-H, Conservative.com. And go on there, read about us. Some are saying, you know, so you're declaring war on the Republican Party? Absolutely not. I'm defending the Republican Party. I'm defending those that are under attack from the establishment, from those who would destroy our party and have it go the way of the Whigs. You know, and there are a lot of people that say, you know, the Republican Party leaders are just so off track, time to start a new party and it'll go away like the Whigs. The trouble is we have so much debt that's building up so quickly, so many foreign powers that want to take us out, so many things that can do so much damage to us. We don't have time for a third party. We have got to work within the structure that's here and hold people to account, get them to do what they promised. And this GOHConservative.com is just one little element we're hoping will help.
You know, Congressman, we were so impressed when we the people rose up in 2010 and we took back our House of Representatives. Don't you think we can do it in the U.S. Senate? Don't you think we can win the White House?
I absolutely do. The problem that will keep us from winning the majority in the Senate will be if the establishment continues, the establishment of the Republican Party continues this war against conservatives, against Tea Party people, then they can blame who they want to, but it will be their fault for destroying the very people that could have given them the majority.
Listeners, we're speaking with Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas District 1, the House of Representatives, Vice Chair of the Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. He's talking to us today about, well, Republican politics and conservative politics, and both as they intermingle, and his GO Conservative PAC. That's GO spelled like Gohmert, G-O-H, Conservative PAC. Congressman, thank you so much for spending this time with us today. Any last words for our listeners?
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And thank GoConservative.com, and we can work together.
Amen, and thank you so much for your leadership.
Well, thank you so much, Anna.
Okay, Bella, and that was Congressman Louie Gohmert from the 1st District of Texas. And, you know, Bella, let me just thank my co-host on the Conservative Commandos radio show, Anna Little and John Mosley, for helping me in putting together those interviews. But, you know, Bella, when things are going bad, when news coming out of D. D.C., Washington, D.C., is disappointing. I feel good that we have people like Congressman Louie Gohmert down there in Washington, D.C. He represents 1st District of Texas, but he represents all of us in America. And his Go Conservative PAC is to help conservatives that won't get help from the mainstream GOP.
But what I'm hearing, and we also, I've got Ben Gay and Q here, and I'm going to bring them on in a second. Ben, there's a little bit of background noise, so I'm going to mute you for a second. The problem,
sure,
though, that is, the problem is, what did he say? He said, you know, hoping that Republicans will work with the conservatives and with the Tea Party. Now, hope is horrific outcome per emotion. There isn't a hope. That's the whole problem, though, Rick, is that we've got two parties, and the reality is that the Republicans have switched over. They're part of the country club. They're part of the problem, and they are fighting tooth and nail against the Tea Party. And when they bring up the point about 2010, when we flipped all those seats in the Senate, look at what happened. I mean, we flipped all those seats. I was excited. I was talking with Hannity right after it happened, and I said, but how are we going to hold their feet to the fire when they get in there? How are we going to hold them to what they campaigned to get those seats? How are they going to fight against those big rhino career politicians? And that's the big battle that we have ahead of us. And real quick, I want to bring on Ben Gay III. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fine, Bella. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. All cranked up and torqued up as usual. We have Rick Trader with us, and I with Conservative Commando Radio, and I know you were listening to that interview, and my point that I'm making is that's the fight that we've got, is that our own party is fighting from within.
Oh, Bella, I totally agree with that. And as I mentioned in setting up this interview, we are fighting a two-front battle. One with the liberals and the other with the mainstream rhino Republicans. And this is what Congressman Gohmert is trying to do. He is trying to give conservatives who are looking to run for Congress, he's trying to give them a vehicle to do this with. Now, let's face it, Bella. To get elected, it takes money. And right now in the Republican Party, it is the mainstream rhinos that control this money. So PACs like the Go Conservative PAC, that is a PAC to help fund campaigns for conservatives. Look, on the other side, we've got the rhino Republicans like Karl Rove, John Boehner, John McCain, Mitch McConnell. They're the ones that are the rhino Republicans that have the power. And just like the liberals, the rhino Republicans want to keep the power. Now, these rhino Republicans were very, very threatened by the Tea Party Revolution of 2010. And you're right, Bella, you're absolutely right. We've got to keep their feet to the fire. I think the mistake that was made after 2010 was too many in the Tea Party said, okay, we now won. We now turn these 65 seats. We can go back to our easy chairs and turn back on the boob tube. The job is done. When the job was and the battle was actually just beginning.
But let me ask you. Okay, so the Tea Party get them in office, but that's what I'm saying. They get into office, the campaign of the Tea Party, but that's the problem. They get into office, and then they get sucked right into the whole country club. And that's why I sit here, and as I listen to this, I mean, you know, I got to go back to, though, when I remind people, again, we at least need to stand and support. We do now finally have people running for office that are not career politicians. They are business people. That is a new turn in the elections of people that are going after these top seats, and we've had them here on the program. So it's just that we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and we've got to get out and get people listening and paying attention and just as motivated, just like in 2010, but we've got to be backing these guys that are going in that are not the politicians, because that is at least the beginning of slowing down the massive destruction and this country club atmosphere that is up there just completely dismantling this thing step by step, and then you might want to jump in.
I'm listening intently. I really enjoyed the congressman's segment. I'm a big, big fan of his. Agree with virtually everything he said. I talked to you before about that fine line, though, and Rick, I'm agreeing with you, however, somewhere there has to be that fine line so that we don't go off the cliff with our flags flying to another defeat again. I think the Senate is within reach this time, almost easily, if we don't do something incredibly stupid. And the White House is certainly within reach, depending on the nominee. However, if we destroy ourselves in the process, you know, maybe there ought to be more backroom talking going on and less public stuff. However, if we destroy ourselves in the process, we're going to do again to ourselves what Ross Perot and I was talking to a man today about his running mate, and now I'm drawing a blank, but what Ross Perot and all the others who have tried this in the past, not that the Tea Party is trying to be a third party, but have split a party set up for victory and caused defeat. So I'd like to see more fighting in the back rooms with the door shut and less fighting on Fox News and so on. I'm a big fan of Fox, but I'm not sure that ripping ourselves apart in public is the way it ought to be done, and I'm open to suggestions. Tell me a better way to do it.
Well, Ben, I totally agree with you about the idea of the third party. I think when you talk about Ross Perot, that was a third party. And thanks to Ross Perot, we got a guy by the name of William Jefferson Clinton in the White House. So I agree with you on third party. And that's what one of the things that Congressman Gohmert said to us in our interview. He is against the idea of a third party. What he's trying to do is he's trying to give conservatives an option, a place where they can go to get funding to run their campaigns. I believe, Ben, and you tell me how you feel about this too. Bella is right when she says that when they get down to Washington, it's like something happens to them. Ben, I honestly think there's something down in that water in Washington, D.C. I think that a lot of these people go down there with the right intentions. But when they get down there, they do get caught up in this power thing, and they do get into the old boys club. Well, Ben, that's what our vote is for. If we hire them and we don't like the job they do, then we find them and we find somebody else to take their place who will do the job that we sent them down there to do.
Totally agree.
Well,
I agree too, but I also look at
the reality. There's a couple things as I'm sitting here. First of all, whoever gets the GOP nomination, none of us are going to be able to agree, and this is what happened to us in the last election, but whoever gets the GOP nomination in 2016, we have to. That is the biggest push. On top of 2014, the November election, the problem is, you know, when, think of it as any big corporation, right? When the head in charge of the big corporation and you're just a salesperson or you're coming into a new establishment, the likelihood that you're going to be able to cut off the head of the snake and make any drastic changes, that's the problem, is that this government has gotten so big and so far-reaching and so corrupt and so criminalistic, you know, and so with realistic expectations, we need to first sit and look at that Senate. And then we also, as people, you know, and I say this all the time, and that's why I at least walk the walk. When you're out there and you're talking to people, you have to literally talk to everybody, whether you're in the grocery store, you're flying on a plane, you're pumping gas, you know, getting people engaged and getting people talking, getting people listening, because we are the ones that are going to be making the differences when we're headed into these elections and supporting these candidates. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do that, and if we sit back and just say, I hope they do it. I hope they take the seats back. I mean, this is really a push for us to say, you know, do we really understand what we stand to lose if we don't get out and make a real concerted effort and to get people engaged. Because, you know, as I sit here and have my conversations, and I say all the time, at what point in this country, and Ben, you and I, when we first met on the phone, Rick, you know, we've been involved in this for 4 years on our radio show. You know, Sundance has become involved as he's out here working in the oil fields with me. And I say this all the time, at what point in this country did you ever walk around with such fear and dread and worry about where this country is headed? And that's why it's so important that we get out and do things different and actually be doers and not just, you know, Facebook screamers and doomsday and preppers and ready to just jump in that ditch and hide, because, you know, it has not, it's not completely over the cliff, but it damn sure is close. But when I sit here and I listen to this, the biggest battle that we fight are the Republicans and those of us that want the change that are trying to fight and push the career rhinos out. And it's a big battle ahead of us.
Well, Bella, it takes money. Like it or not, it takes money. And if we don't have conservative groups that are going out after that money, you're going to have the rhino groups that are.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have the Carl Rose and the John Boehners and the John McCains and the Mitch McConnells. They're not going to sit back and wait. They're not going to fight fair or play fair. They're going to be out digging for the money. So I would rather see conservatives go out and get that money, because that is how that is how we're going to get more people down in Washington thinking like we are.
I completely agree, and, you know, one of the things that I try to explain to these politicians that come onto this show, you know, the big misconception of the oil field is that we're a bunch of redneck, dumb hicks, and that we're all just a bunch of, you know, grease guys sitting around, you know, chewing and spitting and cursing, and we're all ignorant. And I explain to them, this is where the heartbeat of America is. This is where some of the strongest patriots, God-fearing, God-loving family, and let's not overlook who are the ones really working hard, doing tough jobs. You know, over this weekend, it was minus 20, 30 below wind chill. We had the rigs freezing up. We had trucks freezing up. It didn't stop us. We didn't start walking around and saying, oh, it's too cold. I'm going to sit inside and stay all warm and watch football and go to the movies. We're the ones out here working, but we also have money because we are working. And what I tried to explain to these guys when they come on the show, make an impact, talk to the oil field, recognize who we are, what we are, because you know what, guys, when these guys go on their days off, they're going all across this country back home bringing their pocketbooks. And if you can get an attention out in the oil field and to some that are going back to the home state of these people that are running, they have funds to back. And you're absolutely right, Rick. It is about money, and that's what scares me with some of these, also these young guys coming in that are just businessmen. They don't have the deep pockets, and I always say I just hope there's very wealthy business people out there that are listening, that are saying, how do I support and get some of the funding to the right guys in these positions, because it's going to take money, and it's going to take big kahunas.
Lots of money, and again, Bella, I know a lot of people that have run for office, and the hardest thing for them to do, it's easy to get people to pat you on the back. It's easy to get people say, yeah, I'm behind you. But it's very difficult for people to get others to open their wallets to contribute. And this is a mistake that I think conservatives make, that they don't contribute enough to monetarily to support candidates. The left, the liberals, are very, very good at raising money, raising funds. The gays are very good at raising money. The feminists are very good at raising money. And that's what conservatives need to do. They need to not just talk on Facebook. And yes, that's good, and talk to each other, and yes, that's good. But they have to do a couple other things, too. They have to open their wallets and support their candidates financially also, they have to go to work for those candidates. They have to go knocking on doors. They have to go, they have to be making phone calls in support of their candidates. Not just talking to the choir, but talking to people outside the choir, raising money, putting boots on the ground.
Well,
I had an experience.
Go ahead, Ben.
This is Ben Gay. Interesting experience today. My wife, Judy, had a little medical problem, so we had to go up to the hospital, and I was sitting in the waiting room and noticed a gentleman with a service cap on, with an aircraft carrier and so on. And I said, thank you for your service, and I don't know how to pronounce that name, and he taught me of the aircraft carrier. And we began talking, but because we started talking about 15 feet apart, and neither one of us moved, I was waiting for my wife to come out, he was waiting for his wife to come out, the entire waiting room was treated to our discussion. And we agreed on, I don't remember anything we didn't agree on. And when we got finished and Gigi came out and I stood up to leave, there was a mild splattering of applause around the waiting room.
Wow.
Having heard two old conservatives go at it lovingly for about, I'd say 30 minutes or so. It was a wonderful time. And by the way, you were talking about John McCain earlier. He was a shipmate of John McCain. And they said the mortality rate went up on any ship McCain served on. And
what was that?
Talking about the mortality rate on any ship John McCain served on went up because although his father was an admiral, he seemed to think he was an admiral and was arrogant and reckless. This was the aircraft carrier that he blew up a plane on.
Was that the Oriskany?
It may have been because it was a name I couldn't pronounce, so I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, that's sort of off the point, there was no love lost for John McCain all the way back to Vietnam in the Navy, and when he ran for president, this gentleman admitted that he stayed home that year. He said, I just couldn't bring myself to vote for him. And part of it was Navy pilot, and part of it was what McCain stood for, which he said wasn't much.
Mm-hmm. Well,
hey,
you know, even John McCain admits that he had a real attitude prior to becoming a prisoner of war, and he says that experience of becoming a prisoner of war did change his attitude.
Perhaps so.
But, Ben, you know...
Hey, we're coming up to the... Hang on, you guys. We're coming up to the top of the hour. But, you know, Ben, sharing that with us tonight, that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say get up tomorrow and go do the right thing. You know, that reminds me of several flights that I've taken where I've just simply opened up a conversation to a complete stranger that I've never seen before, and I start talking, and by the end of the flight, you know, I've had a few say, now that should have been a radio show. But what it is imagine that one. But that's what I'm talking about when you're going out. And, you know, I know that a lot of people sit here and listen to me and probably think, you've got to be kidding me, talking to complete strangers. And I know that I'm fearless and I will talk to anybody. And that's why when I told George Patton Jr. about that conversation earlier this weekend, when I asked a young man if he knew what a communist was or a Marxist or socialist or a liberal, and he said no to all of them. And then I don't even think he was 20 years old. But what he said was that he actually thought Clinton loved this country and did a better job than the current administration. And it's stories like that and it's engagement like that that, you know, that gentleman, I saw him today when I went back to the gas station, and I told him I was going to talk about him tonight, and I know that I'll see him again, and I've reached a 20-year-old that is now talking about this radio show, tuning in, and that's what I mean by getting people involved and talking to every single person because, you know, it does spread because this is a radio show that started with just me running around with my cards and taking over company men's computers and forcing people like Rick Trader. I told Rick Trader 3 years ago he was going to be on my radio show, and lo and behold, I won Rick over. Ben, when I first talked to you,
Ben, when I first talked to you, I was hoping you would come on one time, and now you're on a regular, and you just never know who you're talking to, who you're going to meet. But I do know this, that we're power in numbers, and we're headed to
syndication. Hey, Bella, that's because you're such a persistent lady. I want you to know that. And, Bella, I know you're coming to the top of the hour, and that probably means the end of your show, and I got to get my crass commercial announcement in. You can listen to me every day, Monday through Friday, from 3 to 5 p.m. It's www.conservativecommandosradioshow.com. Please join us.
Thank you, Rick, as always. God bless until next week. Oh, and you're going to CPAC, and I can't meet you there because I got to work. I can't get away. I'm sorry.
Well, we will have some great interviews that we're going to get down there, Bella, that we're going to be sure to share with you next week. Hey, Ben, it's great to speak with you.
My pleasure, sir. I'm a professional speaker, so my tendency is to speak. However, when I'm hearing great conversation, what I love to do is listen, which I've done tonight, and I thank both of you.
Well, Ben, you know, what you did with that sailor today in the doctor's office, I've also done in the past. You know, I'll see a cap and I'll have a ship on it. You know, for instance, one time I saw a gentleman that was wearing a cap that said the Benjamin Franklin. Well, the Benjamin Franklin was a carrier in World War II that was sunk, and he was on that carrier, and he was one of the survivors. So thank you so much for what you said to that sailor today.
Into the whole waiting room.
Thank you, Ben, and God bless. And tell people where they can find you, Ben. And then I got to wrap out.
Go to www.b as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the number 3.com.
Excellent. Thanks, you guys. This is a great show tonight. God bless you both. Till next time. And Sundance, there's all this racket here on the night company man shack. I'm just inches from opening the door and saying, don't you understand? I'm on the radio.
Yeah, I almost said something to you.
You can hear it, can't you? You know, I'm going to look. There's a night man over there. I'm going to have a few words with him. Oh, there he is. You're interrupting my soul. He's scrubbing his floor. Jeez, there's got to be some order around here. Good grief, there's important business going on besides a damn drilling rig. I got all that. Thank you very much. Jeez. Well, anyways, I should minimize. I was on farmersonly.com while I was listening. I will wrap myself out on that one. But it's a horrific
Jesus.
Site. But I've had a lot of fun out in the field today. And I'm going to go over and I did take one break while I was listening to that interview, and I ran over and I grabbed the other half of my hamburger. And, of course, I ran in with my steel toes and I dragged mud across the office floor. So somebody was sweeping and mopping after me on my way back over here.
Poor guy.
What is this? He has survived. Trust me, he has survived many things. But... As they call me, Red the Tornado. But you know what? If you're going to go loud and take no prisoners, which I never do. And I am headed out to aggravate, frustrate, and tackle and have a lot of fun with my company men tomorrow. Sundance, thanks. Rick Trader, this was a great show. Ben, as always. And I'm going to close out and say good night. God bless. God bless America. Now go out and do the right thing.
lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-changey stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.